Okay, I think we will kick off and get started. Ang, thank you very much for being in the background and also letting in anybody else who sits in the lobby, is stuck in the lobby at all. But very pleased to have you all join us this afternoon. It's actually been a long time coming. I think it's about 6 months since we ran a webinar. So I'm really glad you've been available. And also, I was chatting with the team. It's been very nice to have you back home on South African soil and your calming influence in the office lately. So welcome back.
Thank you, Zarin. Thank you.
To those of you on the line today that haven't met us before, I'm Taryn. I'm the head of marketing as well as digital products at Encona. And Hans, some people call him their favorite auditor, if that's possible. He's also the founder and the chairman of the board at Encona. Hans is a just I'm flabbergasted always by his knowledge in the automotive manufacturing industry. So very excited to have you online again today. Thank you for making time, Hans.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Taryn.
Of course, at Encona, we offer training and consulting, primarily in the automotive and component manufacturing industry. We get plenty of questions, plenty of FAQs we can list. And this year, the topics really have been earlier this year, our hot topic was what has changed in VDA 6.3. As we all know, there were updates on that in January. And this topic is one that I actually came up with because I noticed an increasing trend in VDA 2 bookings in our academy. So, Hans, could you please help the blonde here understand what is this VDA 2? What is PPA? What is the difference? And for something that came out in May 2020, many of us on this line might remember that as a fond time of doing lots of work with our kids in lockdown. That's May 2020 it came out. Why is VDA 2 a hot topic suddenly?
Yeah, I firmly believe, Taryn, that this is explainable. But coming to your first question, there was a number of questions now. The first question, what is the difference between VDA 2 or PPA, as we call it, and PPAP? As the audience probably knows very, very well, there are the two fronts of automotive organizations that design trends and state-of-the-art tools and methodologies for the automotive industry. There we have the big group in the United States, represented by the AIAG, which is supported by the big North American OEMs. We call them the big three. It's General Motors, would be Ford, and now back in the days it was Chrysler, but then Chrysler merged into Fiat Chrysler, FCA, and FCA is now part of Stellantis Group. But those are the big North American OEMs, and they have the AIG world, which is the Automotive Industry Action Group. And what they do is basically they design state-of-the-art tools and methodologies to be applied for the automotive industry when dealing with those big threes. And the counterpart, if I may call it that, on the European side, in Germany, is the German Car Maker Association with VDA. And they have the similar, if not the same, concept. They're also supported financially by the German car makers, which is the Volkswagen Group, the Mercedes-Benz, and the BMW car groups. And what they do is they also send representatives from the OEMs, plus qualified, experienced experts from the supply chain, and they build task force groups where they design those standards and then finally release them. The problem we have nowadays is that the AIAG, the North American side, and the German side are not really aligned when it comes to those specific core tools. And that's why we have today a differentiation between the AIG, which is the PPAP that you just mentioned, the production part approval process, which has generally 18 submission requirements. And then you have the counterpart for the German car makers, which is the VDA2, and they call it PPA procedure, which is the production process and product approval. Very similar. The intention is the same, to get for every supplier a final approval so that the supply chain can shift into serial shipments of their products. Okay. And the reason why, and you mentioned earlier, I just made a note here of all your questions. Yes, it is not a brand new standard. So why do you recognize now an increased trend? And we at Ancona are permanently in contact also with the OEMs, and we have those deep dive thoughts and discussions about the future and the current proceedings and supplier development and all that. And it must be said, and this is answering your questions, why there is a trend. Firstly, we have an ever-increasing complexity of automotive vehicles. Mm. All right. So they're not getting easier. Technology is coming in. If you strip and dismantle a mid-sized class vehicle, you're looking at 23,000 to 25,000 single components.
Wow.
And that tells you already how complex a vehicle is. And if you now understand that each and every part needs to have a sort of an approval from the customer upstream, wherever you sit in the supply chain, already tells you that this is a very, very complex scenery that we are finding ourselves in. And another reason is the increased amount of platform strategy. The OEMs drive massive platform strategies. So that entitles them, not entitled, but that allows them to launch many more different models in a way quicker speed. Mm-hmm. But if you're a supplier that is above the platform, okay, then which means it's dropping the values, but it's increasing the new projects. And new projects is calling again for a PPA case or a PPAP case for the American side. So that is something. And then something what we really notice out there is, and I believe in 40 years of finding myself in the automotive industry, I've never seen a situation like that, is the ever-increasing amount of engineering changes, may it be during the project phase, but also in serial life. And and when we look into the standard, engineering changes also trigger, again, a PPA case. So it's getting more and more and more and more, so that we have the situation that the OEMs, and this is really what they say straightforward, we need to reduce the amount of testings in such a way that we are not careless what we're doing, but a lot more efficient and more effective with what we're doing. Currently, the state is that OEMs intend to want everything. And if you look at that complexity of a drawing, there is a hell of a lot going on. So they are now ready and prepared to reduce the efforts, but in a clever way and not being careless, of course, but in a way to consider the risk-based thinking world that we are in for product design and for process development. And the second one is, you also mentioned that specifically in South Africa, you see an increase of those trainings. That is also available at Volkswagen, and it must be that case. Volkswagen has a plant in Uitenhage here in Newport Elizabeth, and the local supplier development team around Manny Coelho They're doing a tremendous job there. So they're really, really engaging with the supply chain and driving those units forward to have a mutual benefit from this side. So lots of kudos go to this team around many. And so I'm not surprised that you see also an increase in VDI trainings in South Africa specifically.
Yeah, actually, now that you mention it, I just remember seeing that in a few customer queries. I need this VW requirement. It's nuts to me. I wrote down a note here. I think you told me this stat before, 25,000 parts in a car. That's a lot of parts to get approval on. I can see it's really clear that we need to reduce testing efforts. But it sounds like it's both sides, OEM and supply chain.
No, Hans, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is it within the PPA approach that aims to achieve that?
Well, firstly, as I said earlier, the OEMs at this point in time are running the safety path and requiring everything that is somewhere stuck on a DRD, which is the design requirement document. Mm-hmm. If you look in a drawing, there is not only the part with lots of product characteristics. There is also a full amount of text specifications like braking loads and pull-off forces and flammability and surface treatment requirements. We call them text specifications. And over and above that, there's a huge amount of references to customer-specific requirements that also asks for a specific test. And the OEMs want to see everything. So, but what is that everything? It's so complex and it's so much that we have to understand, and this is really what I also discuss with the OEMs and the big tier ones, is we need to understand that we are living in a risk-based environment. So we need to understand what is the risk in each and every test we are doing, and what is the risk in not doing certain tests on characteristics where we don't find special characteristics. And nobody's discussing critical characteristics. We're not going there, but what about other characteristics? And from that perspective, it is now the challenge for the whole industry, OEM, and then down into the supply chain, to understand that we have this risk-based thinking approach for product design and process development. The difficulty we have right now is that, and we see it again and again, that too often product designs are no more longer robust. Mm-hmm. And when I say not robust, meaning, I mean, if you look at what is the actual task for a design engineer? And I've been one myself for a couple of years. Very difficult job. But the ideal task for a design engineer is to provide a product design that is made for manufacturability under process capable conditions. That's what you find in the book. So what is process capability? We will elaborate on that. And if that design is not robust enough to be produced in mass production under process capable conditions, we will find issues in serial life. And that's where we currently sit. So the risk-based approach does cater not only for the product design, but also for the manufacturing process design. And both of them is also catered in VDI 2, as you're not only approving the manufacturing process, but also through the product validation, also the product, right? Same like in the PPAP world. And this is where VDI now comes in, because VDI 2 now allows to apply that risk-based thinking approach, because they are the experts of their technologies, all right? And VDI 2 now caters for that, which is completely different sequence to PPAP, because VDI 2 allows now the supplier to come forward with a proposal as to how we're going to, what we're going to measure, what we're going to test, what we're going to submit during the course of a PPAP, approval or a PPA approval in VDA 2. And that is a complete turnaround. That's a complete change of paradigm. Yeah. So the expert of the technology, the supplier, is now coming forward with a proposal by applying the product and the manufacturing process development risks. Okay. And come up with a proposal in various different areas to suggest to the OEM or to the customer above, wherever you find yourself in the supply chain. I said, this is my proposal, how we deal with that. And that is complete new or complete different to the American way, because, and we call this the so-called PPA agreement. So the agreement is brought up forward by the supplier, and it has to be agreed at project start. If you look at PPAP, and in the old days, how we applied it, we started with PPAPing in the process validation phase. If you look into APQP or in MLA, after process in process validation, and then you do the PPAP, that is basically just before serial launch. But VDA 2 now comes with the proposal already at project start in ML2 for the ones of you that deal with the maturity level assurance for the German car makers. And that is something very new. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear that. I wrote down two thoughts here. I don't know if I'm on the right track, but this really is quite opposite. It sounds like almost a cultural change and shift with this trust needed, putting it in the hands of suppliers.
Yes, in a way it is. In a way it is, and I must say that the times that we are still in too much is do as we say. Mm-hmm. But it's not giving the whole responsibility to the supplier, because remember there should be a mutual benefit for both.
Yeah.
But both are now, it is possible for both parties now to reduce massive efforts in testing and de-stressing the laboratory capacities, which we have all over the show, by not being careless. Just being more efficient, right? So nobody's discussing that critical characteristics don't need to be tested. VDA 2 is not talking about that. But what are we doing with a number of characteristics in a plastic injection tool where an expert looks at the tool and would say, if you control this and that characteristic, then all the other cavities will be filled with material. So tool-related characteristics.
Okay,
and that's what we and that's what that that's what we're talking. So nobody is now promoting it to be careless. That's clearly not, but to be a lot more efficient in what we do. Okay. And from that perspective, it's definitely the right way to go.
Yeah, it sounds refreshing to me. Hans, sorry, did you change slides at all? Because I'm still seeing the opening slide. I don't know if anyone else is. I thought I saw earlier.
No, it's still there now. It's just when there's some questions, or we'll jump in.
Okay, perfect.
Not really as a.
Yeah. I think the next one you had a lot on. So to me, what actually does the PPA agreement cover? So you mentioned that the supplier puts it forward at project start. What does it cover, though? I'm not clear on that.
So now you're bringing me on a thing here. Maybe it's time to get to...
Now I'm bringing you to a slide.
yeah. Okay, for the ones of you out there that are dealing with Germans, and VDA 2 is apparently a German core tool. So this is the maturity level stream in a typical project of a product life cycle, if you want to call it that. And ML1, ML0 and ML1 is typically taking place at OEM level, And at ML2 is basically where the big tier one suppliers come to the party. And this is where the tier ones also start to specify the supply chain, the onboarding of suppliers.
Okay.
Yeah. And in ML2, the PPA agreement is already negotiated between supplier and OEM. So at project start. And the reason why this is so refreshing, and I'm going to use the word that I heard from you earlier, it is really refreshing. And you ask me, what is that agreement catering for? Well, first of all, PPA in general has many more deliverables or submission requirements than PPAP. PPAP has 18, which is already too many for a lot of people. VDA 2 generally refers to 47. But here's the thing, 47 deliverables, if not otherwise agreed in this PPA agreement, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So you have already the potential in this agreement to filter out relevant submission requirements according to this list. That will be the first one that it caters for to regulate that. Secondly, very important in VDA 2, you are now allowed to add different product families or product variants in one and the same PPA agreement,
okay.
which can potentially give you a lot of reduction in testing because you identify a reference one, and that caters also for other variances.
Mm.
Which is a huge reduction, all right? So that is catered for. Another thing is what's catered for is a typical problem that everybody has in the supply chain. How are we dealing with directed suppliers? A directed supplier is a supplier where the OEM or a tier one, depending on your above client, tells you, you have to source certain components exactly from the supplier. That's a directed supplier. So it's not my free will where I use my purchasing and onboarding criteria. The customer tells you, you have to source from there. And that is often a very, very political scenery. And I had a discussion with folks not too long ago about this. And said, folks, you need to understand, a supplier doesn't have necessarily a problem to take quality responsibility for parts that are coming from direct suppliers. They really don't. The problem that the supply chain is sitting in when a problem occurs, the OEM or the tier one customer will then send an NCR report to the supplier. The supplier is now asked to open a D report, and that directed supplier will say, well, I'm not going to open the doors for you, and I don't give you any information, and I'm not going to be part of your problem-solving team. That's the problem they have. So, and that is a very common problem, again, and ever since I find myself in this industry. And VDA 2 has now the framework to cater for that exactly, to really find a regulation, who is who in the zoo, and who is responsible for what, if a directed supplier of myself is involved in an AD report, what is the OEM doing for us to get the things going? We want to take it forward, but we need a support. So that's what VDA 2 also caters for. That can be brought forward, how we deal with direct suppliers. And the product variants, then it also allows the so-called stepped approach. Stepped approach can make a lot of sense when you have certain tests. Color approvals, for argument's sake, is a very time-consuming process. Yeah.
Okay.
So that you do a stepped approach of submission, that you start with a certain package, and then other test reports that come later, like color approvals, do it in a stepped phase. So you can identify already at what times is coming what, to not violate any requirements and to de-stress also lab capacities. And another thing that is a never-ending story. You can also now regulate how we're going to deal with products for requalifications. Requalifications, and I guarantee you, Taryn, if I ask any one of these lovely people that are listening today and said, what experiences do you do with requalifications? They're probably all going to run away now. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is. And this is so ridiculous today that I nearly find any words. It's really problematic. So now imagine you can also use your expertise as a supplier and say, our proposal is from this DRD, from this drawing, that certain characteristics we bring into the requalification. We can identify already how many parts that is, which characteristics, and everything negotiated, defined at the beginning of the project. Because once you run this project into serial launch, the discussions will come. And the auditors come, the customer auditors come, and they always find non-conformities. But if you really look back, and I can tell you this, it's insane where we've developed this whole requalification. The basic idea of requalification was, and this might be interesting for many of you, and it made perfect sense back in the days. I mean, we all have our control plans, serial production controls plans. In those serial production control plans, you check permanently throughout the year so many characteristics, maybe process or product characteristics throughout the year. The requalification or annual layout inspection, as it was called back in the days, the scope of that is, guys, if you look at the drawing and you count out all the characteristics and requirements that are controlled throughout the year in a control plan, that small delta that is not controlled, that should be once per annum should be requalified. That's the basic scope. And today, we have customers out there. They want a full PPAP for instead of requalification. That just doesn't make any sense. So we want more and more and more instead of really applying together mutually between the customer and supplier and use all your experiences from the technology, from product design and process design, apply that risk-based thinking approach and come to a mutual agreement in this PPA agreement to reduce the efforts, to make the process more efficient and not being careless. That's the idea. NVIDIA 2 caters for that. Yeah, that's when you ask me what PPA can actually do for a supplier.
It leaves a lot of room to negotiate from the supplier point of view, comparison.
And rightfully so, because they are the masters of their technology. Remember, a design engineer must design a product for manufacturability. Mm-hmm. So now, if the product design is not robust, most of the suppliers identified as that, guys, there's an issue here. But and this is where the mutual approach should come in already at the very beginning. I mean, the first point of contact for the supplier is a feasibility study when he goes over the DRDs and the product specifications. There we have another problem because too many suppliers sign it off and say it's feasible, although they know it's not. But not because they are criminals, clearly not. They do so because they fear they might not get the business.
Yeah.
So the customer is now asked to help them understand that pulling the plug on a feasibility study does not mean that you don't get the business. And this is where we have to bring people together, apply the risk-based thinking approach, and to really come to a mutual understanding to reduce testing efforts, cost, time, and money, mm-hmm. by having the same output, by not being careless in what we are doing together, and bring it over the finish line. That's what VDX is catering for. PPAP, and I like the PPAP standard myself, but it's coming in too late. It's coming in too late, and it doesn't foresee any of such agreements at project start, not in the clarity as VDA 2 does.
So just for absolute clarity for me, and for those on the call who haven't met me before, I do not come from the manufacturing background. So I learn a lot from these webinars. Is VDA 2, then it's fully replacing the PPAP. They're not both done in the case of the German OEMs that follow the VDA standards, for example. There won't be a PPA and a PPAP, correct?
Well, typically how it's meant to be, the use of core tools are stipulated in every OEM's or customer's specific requirements.
Yeah.
And then you can traditionally say that if you deal with an American OEM or American big like Lear Corporation and stuff like that, you're most likely linked to the PPAP rules because that's AIG, that's the North American side. Right. If you deal with Mercedes, Volkswagen, you very likely, if we have Volkswagen or Mercedes Benz, they will ask you to do the VDA guidelines.
Okay.
So it's just the problem is that AIG and VDA don't have a recognition. They started now with the FMEA. The FMEA mm-hmm. has been the very first core tool that has been where you see a harmonized version between AIG and VDA. So both recognize this particular way. But on the other side, there's only one OEM in this world that requires that harmonized version. That's Mercedes-Benz. No other OEM, not even Volkswagen. And they're usually the most comprehensive OEM when it comes to CSRs, by far. Not even them have that in. So you could still choose this way or that way. And then we have customers that should require through the supply chain PPAP, but they also tolerate VDA 2 and vice mm-hmm. versa.
Okay.
That's remember back when Daimler Chrysler were together. Chrysler was AIG. Daimler back in the days was VDA. So here even the plant we Mercedes-Benz for many, many years still recognized PPAP, which Chrysler brought in back then. So it's a mix-max. But clinically, it should be that way that the German OEMs require VDA 2 for the same purpose, to approve manufacturing process and products for serial life. Okay. And AIG, the Americans, should do this with PPAP until there is a harmonization in the go.
Thank you. I like to understand interlinkages. Hans, you mentioned a key word to me earlier about VDA 2, agreement. Now, what if there's no agreement between the parties, the supplier and the OEM?
Taryn, I was afraid you're going to ask this. Look, formally, the mutual interests for both sides, and I say this again very clear, and I really had in-depth, especially with Volkswagen and Mercedes-Benz lately. And they both say is that we need to reduce. It is just too much. We cannot even handle all these documents that are flying in. And we can't even go through each and everything. So what is the point here? So it appears they are now willing and ready and needing to come to the party. If there's no agreement coming along, basically the standard caters for it in such a way as if you look into these 47 deliverables, it has certain deliverables identified. If they are not agreed, they are still mandatory to be submitted. And that's only 10. Only 10.
Okay.
So five would be software-related deliverables, and five would be from the standard product technologies. So if somebody is not involved in software, just delivering components, as per the standard, you would only be obliged to provide five submission documents. But that doesn't help you the whole way, because the rest still needs to be produced. That's the same like in the PPAP. And you don't get into these other areas of requalification, of directed suppliers, of product families integration, product variants integration, and stuff like that. So you want to ideally have a lot more potentials of reductions without being careless. And I say this again and again. And you will be stuck also with the trigger metrics. The trigger metrics applies in VDA 2 for any changes and modifications that the supplier is bringing in. And these engineering changes, these ECRs, or engineering change requests, as we call them, can be issued by anybody. Can be issued by a customer, can be issued by yourself as a supplier, or by your supplier, or sub-supplier, if you want to call it that. And the amount of ECRs that are running around currently is absolutely insane. I really have no more words for this. This is craziness. And it's also linked to product design robustness, and it's also linked to increased complexity of vehicle designs in general.
Okay.
So if there's no agreement coming together, formally the book would tell you exactly what you have to submit. Five, mm-hmm. plus five in software if you include it. But it's simply not ideal. And I want to be frank with you. We also do a lot. I think I've trained 200 people in the last year in VDA 2 myself. And as a VDA license partner in Kona, we also go through these trainings where there is. A role play, so to speak. So there's teams, and they have to prepare a PPA agreement. And then, as it should be, according to the book, then we have a role play of presenting that proposal for the customer. And okay. The ideal thing is that the proposal is coming from experts from the technology. They should know. They know the technology. They know all the problems that they have. And then the role play, the two customers also understand, because they're coming from the same company. I'm talking about the in-house training, for argument's sake. Mm-hmm. So they know exactly the right questions to ask. Mm-hmm. And there you can see through and through how difficult it is for the teams to sell your proposal, because you need to sell. It's not enough just to propose. You need to sell. And I had this discussion with Mercedes and Volkswagen lately, and they say, Hans, they just don't present confidently. I'm open. I'm willing, but the way they present, you ask your questions and they stumble and they don't bring it together. Mm. And then I'd rather go back and say, okay, then rather let's go the whole nine yards, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we need to understand both sides where we're coming from. This is a complete change of paradigm that's coming here. And we need to find together. But I can tell you, if somebody asked me, what if that proposal is you have to send the A team, guys? Mm-hmm. I can tell you when you go into these meetings with your customer, and you go into this proposal, bring the A team. You don't need A team. You need the A team, the guys that conquer countries. Those guys you need. and that have the answers for each and everything, because they will ask you to justify as to why do you propose a reduction here and here and here, if that makes sense. And they don't want to test you, they just want to see the confidence, because surely the supplier is the commodity and technology expert in the manufacturing process.
Yeah,
and that's how this game is playing. You need to send the A team, and I can tell you we've I mean, I cannot say any customers or of ours. We've made workshops, we prepared proposals, and we already presented in front of very 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 big OEMs in Germany. Okay, and it's amazing how far this company was driving it already. Just by sending the right people and the A team to this, to really be able to justify every proposal, because they might think you just want to reduce for a reduction of money's sake,
mm-hmm.
which they don't. But that's an opinion one can have. So you need to justify as to why do you feel not this and that. All right. Especially when you have different customers for the same thing, they ask you, it's the same product that gets the other customer, the same product. And they ask for, again, each and every test that the world has ever created. It's like, guy, we have the same product for a different customer. Well, yeah, but because we are different. those kind of things. And those need to be reduced to the max, as I tell our clients. In a mutual way, where we help one another to understand that it is a mutual benefit. We don't want to be careless in the way we're doing it. We just want to be more efficient and cost efficient and time efficient for both sides. And that's the mutual benefit that we dare to can cater for.
Yes, and it's like you say, not at the cost of safety characteristics, etc. This doesn't cover that.
No, a safety characteristic is not even not debatable. Of course not.
Yeah.
But that's just a minority of. There's many others that the books intend to provide everything. But and this is where VDA2 leaves now the room to have this proposals come into the game at the beginning of the project, come to this mutual agreement. And then run a super project and bring it over the finish line, you know. And everything is regulated, as I said, for requalification. No discussions more. We can always go back. This is what we agreed. This is what you get. Thanks for coming. That's why you always have the discussion.
Do you have and that's funny. I see you got the reminder, potential overage. We always go over on these hunts. We're not good at keeping to the timing. Do you perhaps have an example there of the flow towards reaching agreements or the deliverables that are included?
Yeah, we do. We do. Let's start maybe here. This is basically the organization, and organization means the supplier.
Mm-hmm.
For the ones of you that still dealing and remember the old days, especially with Volkswagen, but also the other German OEMs, when you have a Note 1, a Note 3, and a Note 6 during your part approval. So Note 6 was a complete reject. Note 3 was an interim approval, and Note 1 was fully approved. So VDA 2, as it stands now, has completely eliminated. There's no more Note 1, Note 3, Note 6. That's also good. We need to. But basically, what's going to happen, this is the power of this. We're just changing the paradigms. I cannot repeat it enough. The supplier is now in charge to not only propose what we do for PPAP submission, he also proposes the result of the decision.
Okay.
That is unheard of. Because these days the customers said upload, and then please wait till I make a decision. That's where we stand right now. And this is now coming forward where the supplier also proposes the decision for the customer in such a way is here you have product, production process, general deliverables, and software. In these four chapters, you find those 47 deliverables, like you have them listed in PPAP with 18. You will find 48 of them, okay? Mm-hmm. Then VDA requires basically to do a self-assessment. That is prior to submission, a self-assessment for the product and for the product validation and also for the manufacturing process validation. So let's say, and then the supplier has the possibility to say requirements are met in that self-study, then everything would be green, okay? Mm-hmm. Or requirements not fully met or even not met. It doesn't really matter, okay? But if it's green in the self-assessment, there's two self-assessment checklists. One for the product, one for the manufacturing process. If everything is green, now the organization proposes the PPA procedure to be concluded. Concluded means, in the old terminology, note one. Supplier proposes that already. If one of the criteria in the self-assessment is not fully met or not met, this is also very new. Then the standard foresees that the supplier comes up with a risk assessment for these certain criteria that were not met or not fully met.
Mm-hmm.
VDA 2 promotes two different ways of risk assessment. One is the FMEA that everybody knows. The other one is the ABC risk classification of MLA.
Mm-hmm.
I can show you this one real quick here as well. This one. So this is the VDA risk classification that we use for an MLA project. Reason being is also product related, it's process related, it's time related because it's approach and supplier related. So you basically go through a rating of all these questions with 0, 1, and 2. And then you just add up a total amount of sum. And then according to the suggestion from VDA, if you score 18 and more points, you classify it as an A, B, and C. So this is also what VDA promotes because it's fully aligned with the criteria with what we do in VDA 2.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two. So then with the execution of the risk assessment, the supplier needs to present this again to the customer. And again, you're going to send the A team, because you need to justify your risk assessment. You want to get the buy-in from the customer to walk the way with you as the technology expert. So now you got two ways here. With the execution, the supplier can still promote a note one, depending on what the risk is. Is the C risk involved whatsoever? He can promote, in the old terminology, a note three. So we update and deliver a couple of more things. Or a note six where it says new PPAP procedure. I've never seen this in practical life, I must say. And then the old note one, three, and six is now summarized in such a way that your old note one and note three, the status is now called customer ready. So there is no more note one, note three, note six. It's either customer ready or customer not ready. So your old note six is now called customer not ready. Your old note one and note three is customer ready because you can propose even with a yellow risk to go to customer ready status. And that risk assessment now goes again to the customer. And this is where then the customer comes to the party. Remember, this is the last portion of the internal decision that I just showed you. And then you have this joint alignment of risk assessment. This is where you really have to present the risk assessment and your decision as to why you feel you want to have it concluded or to be updated or a new PPAP agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're happy, when they are happy, the customer brings that forward and carries it to a conclusion. Same thing with note 3 and same thing with note 6. So the overall decision, he can follow now your joint risk assessment, basically what you have already proposed as a status of the outcome. Or if you fail to convince him to walk with you, he will make any amendments. He can say, no, that's not enough. And then he goes back. So the power in this is, and that's the route to the customer decision, is that the complete proposal, what we PPAP, what we requalify, is coming from the supplier to be jointly agreed with the customer at project start. But the supplier also now proposes the outcome, the decision of this whole PPA decision and not waiting until the customer does it internally. That's a significant difference.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question.
Definitely. And I think that's really brought my key takeaway. We've got an opportunity here, especially out to the suppliers, to get more efficient, reduce these testing efforts. And to me, the other key takeaway is get prepared. Bring your A. Did you say bring the A team, Mr. T and the gang? Bring them to the party for putting this forward to get that critical agreement. I neglected to mention, sorry, at the beginning of this webinar, we do share the recordings with everybody, and also that there would be a Q&A session towards the end. So if you have any questions, feel free to pop them in the Q&A bar or the chat bar, just as we have 5 minutes left. Hans, was there anything else you wanted to add or wrap up with on this topic?
No, to wrap up, is basically, and I'm repeating myself, it's just the key message that the new people should take from this. Mm-hmm. It is a massive opportunity. I can see it already. I work with the OEMs and I work with the big guy, the tier one suppliers. It's already on the go. It's already showing success. Not always, but you need to understand what we are changing here. It's a complete change of mindset, right?
Yeah.
By applying the risk-based thinking approach, it's a massive opportunity to reduce efforts, time, and money by not being careless, mm-hmm. having the same outcome of it. But what it takes is to work together as a team with the customer, and now I'm really talking to the customers, really, really trust your suppliers a lot more as technology experts. Listen more to them and allow them to propose because there's a reason why they're your suppliers. So they have proven already that they are experts of their commodities and come together and get to this joint alignments and joint agreements to have a really massive framework of a reduced testing program for new part approvals or module approvals. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
But the framework is definitely provided by VDA2 in all these aspects and facets. It's just the people that need to find together. And I'm not getting tired to talk to customers, to rail them in and bring them in and bring them together with the supply chain. But I must say, I would be a fool to say it's always successful at this. But what keeps me going is that I've seen also wonderful success stories already, real success stories. It is doable, but it is the A team that wins the game. It is the A team that puts the minds at ease from an OEM or a tier one customer, wherever you sit in the supply chain. They want them to put their mind at ease. That is all solid. That's all they want. But if we then don't, if we're hesitant and we stumble in explaining this, and then they most likely go back in their shell and ask for the world again. That's where we are. So be prepared and be able to justify each and every proposal that you bring forward, and you will see it's going to move the right way.
Yeah, and I know you've certainly been living this topic this year. You've done a lot of the VDA QMC training on VDA too, as well as workshops with clients in preparation. We've got a few questions for you, Hans.
Start with the easy ones, please.
You forget sometimes I don't know which are the easy and which are the difficult. a question from Mariana. These 47 PPA items, are they equivalent with the 18 PPAP items or more than those? Broader, I guess.
Well, it's 18 versus 47, but all of the 18 you will find in the 47 of VDA 2, yes.
Okay.
If that answers the question, we can have a look at it as well. Look, these are deliverables of VDA 2. This is from the product development, design FMEA, that's PPAP, IMDS. Control plans, that's from process, that's all. Then all this is the dimensional reports. It's more specified here in VDA 2. The PPAP only refers to dimensional report and a material and performance test. So this is broken down in different characteristics. Oops. Then appearance, what is new, what you don't find is ESD, so electrostatic discharge and electromagnetic compatibility. That is not to be found in PPAP. Then you have in the validation reports, that's you find everything in PPAP. General deliverables, you have this, you also find in PPAP. PPAP status report from the supply chain, that you won't find. So there is more over and above, but all the 18 part history sheet is also not a PPAP. Many people submit that. They said, yes, but it's not a PPAP submission document. It's because your customer requires it. But according to PPAP, it's not one of the 18. And then you have the extra in the software that you also don't find in the PPAP, specifically like here. So all the 18 are to be found in VDA 2. But over and above VDA 2 or PPA has additional ones. Does that answer the question, sir?
I think so. Does to it? Me. Mariana, she says yes, thank you. Okay, next question. You're getting quite a few now. How to understand the difference between VDA 2 and PPAP in approval of raw materials, such as steel, granulates, etc. Is PPAP / PPA mandatory for those suppliers or not? Automotive is what these days? Those producers, minor customers with only 3 to 5%. Okay. Automotive is not a major end customer really for those suppliers, steel, etc. So is PPAP and PPA mandatory for those suppliers?
Well, the scope is for production parts and production materials. So technically it is part of it. The way it's handled is that material certificates and the analysis protocols, certificates of chemical and physical compositions of materials are accepted in the automotive industry.
Okay, so for then for me, just an add-on there, so if that is, for example, your third tier supplier, perhaps they themselves aren't completing a PPA or PPAP, but it is handled elsewhere in the process. Am I correct on that, by the tier one or tier two?
Yeah, if it's a tier three one, the OEM is not interested in that. So that's okay. Always the above customer that has to deal with the downstream supply chain. But as I said, material certificates and performance tests from the material is what is respected by the automotive industry at this day.
Okay, perfect. A question from Eric. Can you ship with the proposal for conclusion, or do you still have to wait for the customer conclusion?
Can you ship with
the proposal for the conclusion to the suppliers?
No. No, you can't. No, you can't.
Okay. From Millent, do we have a SOP on the VDA2 process? Maybe a benchmark example from some industry. This would be a great support. I'm guessing we don't have one ready to hand.
What is that? We have an SOP in yeah.
Do we have an SOP on the PPA process? Maybe a benchmark example.
Yeah, we have plenty, but that's not something we can share. Unfortunately, those are customer specific, very confidential information.
Ah, okay. In the VDA to the VDA QMC cover examples?
Sorry, Taryn, but in what we do when we do the VDA 2 trainings, we are working on a practical example, and for that there will be the master solution available in terms of a documentation. That's what we do.
Awesome.
But that's linked to the course, and of course we cannot provide that unless you attend the course.
As a supplier that is not design responsible, can I engage in PPA discussions on my customers and directed suppliers? Can I engage in PPA discussions with my customers and directed suppliers if I'm not design responsible?
Well, you can engage with him all the time, and actually it's also a requirement, because if you look into the ITF standard, it says when they ask you for a quotation, they also want a feasibility study. And in that feasibility study, you basically go through the design records that you received from your customer and make comments when you are not happy with certain tolerances or with certain characteristics. Then it's actually expected from you to engage with him and tell him we struggle here and there and give proposals. That's what we call a drawing concern sheet. Mm-hmm. So that feasibility study, you identify something that is maybe not good for production that's coming from the product design, of which we have plentiful. And then it's actually the expectation from the supplier to feedback and said, in the drawing concern sheet, please consider this and that and this and that. So yes, please engage with them, irrespective if you're design responsible or not. Yes.
That sounds positive from my side. Absolutely. Customer ready. Does this mean PSW approval, or how is this handled?
Yes, you have to submit in the submission here, you have the PPA evaluation and you have this cover sheet. The cover sheet for PPA report is the equivalent of a PSW. So that is also together with the PPA evaluation, that's the dimensional report, the self-assessment, and the PPA agreement. Those are all the documents that you're going to submit now together with the initial samples. So there's a specific PPA, PSW, if you want to call it that. It's called the PPA cover sheet report. Does that answer the question? That's always important to get clear. The feedback.
Yeah. If we don't answer any questions, please pop us more in the chat. I'm keeping up with them all. There was one. I know there's one. Yeah, that I mean too. Oh, here we go. Shrikant. By the way, I know. I think you've answered questions and asked questions in quite a few webinars. Thank you for attending often. What additional controls are in place considering electronics manufacturing process?
As you can see, these are the six areas in which you find in total the 47 deliverables. Chapter number 6 is foreseen for everything that is related to software deliverables, if you are related in that. And what are they specifically? I can show you that. These are the software ones. So there's a specific cover sheet for software releases. That's like the PPA software. Definition of scope. Then you are FOSS. That's a free and open source software documentation. Everything you have from the ASPICE, if you have certain documentations from the flows. But this is registering here all these nine documents. And if you don't get to an agreement, those ones that carry an S, you have to bring forward as a minimum mandatory one, those five. And the rest, if you don't have an agreement, because all of these are subject of an agreement. And remember when you asked before, what if an EGRM doesn't come together?
Yeah.
Well, then the standard says only those ones that carry an S have to be submitted.
Okay.
None of the others, actually. And there's only five. That's only five. You see, the rest is all A. If there's no A, there's no submission.
You don't have to submit it?
No.
Okay.
Well, that's the formality. Surely the customer will come for you and chase you, but that's what the book says. I mean, ideally, come to an agreement. That's what we discussed.
Yeah.
But these are the software's particular ones.
Okay. ESD and RPC reference, ? That's a continuation from that question. I don't know these abbreviations and acronyms.
ESD and ECM?
ESD and RPC reference.
Where are we now?
That was a continuation from the previous question. Shrikant, I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name. Apologies, but please could you extend that? RPC soldering standard. Thank you.
Where are we? I'm lost a little bit now.
And we electrostatic those, discharge.
Electrostatic discharge.
Okay.
And EMC, electromagnetic compatibility. You need to understand. You need they're the OEMs require different. They have their own requirements of what they expect and what they not expect. So this is subject of the communication. But ESD is, for argument's sake, when you deal with airbag modules in an assembly process, there's this is controlled burn down of TNT. That's explosives. Huh? There's microgas generators and electrostatic discharge. And I've seen actually one personally when I was still back in the days working for BMW, where one of these modules blew off. So electrostatic discharge controls is always there required where you do with airbags and explosives and stuff like that. EMC is you want to have a proof. Let's say you are delivering a module to an OEM that contains electronics in itself, ECUs whatsoever. You want to make a proof that your component, once it's fit into the car, doesn't generate electromagnetic that is compatible to other modules that also have electromagnetic charging. So So those are two different ones. And this is where you really need to go to your customer and said, what kind of evidence is it that you expect for EMC and for EST?
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
But just remember that if you have a steering wheel, if you have a steering wheel today, there's a lots of electronics going on in the steering wheel today. It's new cars. Now you build it into the car, just make sure it's compatible and it doesn't have any electromagnetic interference with any other modules that are assembled in the vehicle. So that we are on the safe side from that. You find that usually out in the cubing. That's what cubing does.
These requirements and elements are crazy to those of us who've, you know, just thought it was four wheels and, you know, a few pipes holding our cars together.
Yeah, not quite. The car you're driving does.
How I drive. It was suffice to say there's a reason why I've refused to put Incona branding on my vehicle and it's for Incona's benefit. There's one last question, I think, yeah, Hans. What is your experience with transition from old VDA2 to new VDA2? Is the old one still more common, or do you find that suppliers and customers are now already familiar with the new one?
The trend is very clear. The trend is going very clear to this new one. We had at the beginning difficulties for Volkswagen, where you upload the information on Beon system. Was not really synced with the VDA2 flow. So they're still working with node 1, 3, and 6. So, but that's in progress. There is something cooking right now, but definitely on the new way. Mercedes-Benz, they now went away from SQMS. So now you have to upload on PIA. And that's also not 100% linked yet to VDA2, but it's also all in progress. So I can clearly say that this latest version is the future. It's coming. It's rolling out.
Okay. I think that's clear. So not one to be ignored.
No. No.
Awesome, Hans. Thank you very much. And like I suspected and hinted, we did need that little bit of overage time. We have gone a bit over time. Thank you to everybody who stayed on the line. Mm-hmm. I think almost everybody did. These presentations and slides and recordings will be with you soon. I mentioned Monday, possibly not Monday because it's a public holiday here in South Africa. So absolute latest Tuesday. Thank you for joining us and we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Hans, thank you again. And
pleasure. Sure to thanks. Later. And best of luck to everybody.
Yes, good luck. Bye.
Bye.